Get ready, it's time for the podcast.
Welcome back to the Candy Colored Studio. I'm artist Katrina Berg. This is episode 174. I'm calling it The Relatives Came and Holiday Epiphanies. So I'm not going to start out with a red pill. In fact, I think this whole episode for me was a personal red pill. And the more that I think about this idea of red pills, I think that a lot of times it's just having the courage to look deeper or to recognize things that don't make sense and make sense out of it, or just accept that there's not going to be any sense to be made, or just, you know, just to question the official narrative, right? So I think that there's just a lot of things that we experience during the holidays, and I've just been kind of sitting back and noticing things. And it's interesting because sometimes I think that I'm just too busy to notice, but naturally I'm very curious, inquisitive, and I do like to kind of analyze things. And I feel like this holiday season has definitely been one of those times. I keep thinking about the beautiful children's book, The Relatives Came, and it's by Cynthia Ryland and illustrated by Stephen Gamel. I don't know. I'm not sure how to say his name, but the illustrations are fantastic. The story is wonderful. I love her books. I can't even remember how I came across this book, but I really love it. And what I love about it is it's just this idea of this wonderful summer where family comes to visit, lots of family. And it just makes me think about these holiday gatherings. Sometimes, you know, we go to Bear Lake in the summer with all of Carl's family, and that's so special. But also, a couple years ago, his brother and their family came out from back east, and it was so special to hang out with them all summer. And so a lot of the things that happen in this book are definitely things we experienced that summer, and it was really special. But I also love that there's all the messiness. Like the images are just the reality of things, and they just love, and they love hard, and they have a great time, and they're sad when the family leaves, but then it doesn't stay long because they know they'll see their family again the next summer. And I just think, what a fun thing to think about. So there's goals to be sure in the book. And also, I think it's important to just realize that while that is the goal, to have this fun and wild and messy summer together, it also just reminds me that not everything is perfect, and that's okay. Again, this is the goal. So I kept thinking about this book, and we had two of my brothers come to stay for Thanksgiving, and that was awesome. And when they left, it was the same thing. We were sad to see them go. It was a little bit quieter, you know, because the kids get really excited when they're here, and you know, we stay up late talking and lots of fun stuff. But anyways, so we've been having a lot of family gatherings or time with family during the holidays, and that's always special. And yet it kind of made me just think about things, and I had five topics that I thought I would share, of things that I thought about. And I'm curious, like, you know, while you're listening to this, ask yourself, what was your experience this holiday season? Did you get to spend a lot of time with family? Is it big and crazy and really messy, or is it small and intimate? What's it like? What are those experiences like, and what do you learn from the time that you have together? So the first thing that I thought about was that it's important to question the status quo. So my daughter was telling me how she was talking to one of her aunts, and the aunt was asking about her oldest and about his job. And so Anna Claire described it, and then the aunt said, "Oh, I knew that. I just wasn't sure if he still was there because he's had like so many jobs." Okay, so many things to kind of like pick apart here. But first of all, he's 16. And as his mom, I'm actually super proud of him for already having three jobs and three workplace experiences, because when I was about, I had a lot of little jobs that I kind of made up. I would sell lemonade and toothbrushes and the little iced snow cones. We did that. I had a babysitting job. I would sell stationery. I tried lots of things. And those are just little fun little things. But when it came to getting like a secure, serious job, or maybe not so serious, but more like a summer job, I really wanted to be a lifeguard. And I thought that would be such an awesome job. And I remember my parents didn't think it was a good idea. You know, I'm the oldest, so they were trying to figure things out. And I remember my dad said, "You don't want to be a lifeguard your whole life. You need to learn a business." And so I remember he thought it was really important that I came and worked with him at his State Farm insurance office. And he's an agent. Hopefully he's going to get to retire soon, but he is a State Farm agent. And so I would go in and help. And he had a secretary that kind of like, you know, gave me stuff to do. And years later, I found out that she really didn't give me hard stuff to do. She really just didn't give me much in general. And it kind of makes me sad because I'm like, I would have liked to have been pushed. I had no idea that she was kind of, throttling me, if that makes any sense. So I worked there from the time I was 13 and a couple summers, you know, between, college and all that stuff. But really every summer I would work at my dad's office, and it was easy because when my parents went on vacation, I got to go on vacation. I never had to ask for time off. And looking back, I think, oh, that was nice. And they made it so easy for me. But at the same time, like, I think it's really good for teenagers to learn to, number one, have a different experiences, two, to ask for time off. Like, it's scary to ask for time off, right? Like, our daughter, she's learning just to ask for rides at school, and that's intimidating and scary. Our oldest, Karsten, he was really good about that. Like, his freshman year, he was like, "I'm going to get rides home," because he knew that it would really make a big difference for me if I didn't have to go get him. And he made a lot of friends in the process, and that was really cool. So it was a little bit easier for him than for his sister, for Anna Claire. It was a little harder. So it's just interesting, but I know that they've both learned a lot from that experience. So again, I think it's good to have different experiences with work, and then also just, you know, have those maybe uncomfortable talks or, you know, situations where you have to ask for time off, or you have to say if something's not working for you, like a certain shift, or, you know, various things. So getting back to Karsten's job. So he started, I guess, his real first job, like, they've all helped in my studio, and I still consider them my studio assistants, but I knew that their first real job really wouldn't come until they got to do it on their own in a different environment. Just like, it was so, sheltered, maybe that's not the best word, protected, maybe protected is a better word. When I worked at my dad's office, I was very protected. When they worked here in the studio, again, they were very protected, right? It's easy to go on vacations. I really understand when they have certain activities, they just tell me, "I've got this, I can't help you with this today," or whatever. And I understand, right? And so it's really protected. And so I knew that their first real job would be kind of out in the world. And during pandemic, Karsten had this opportunity to work at a local physical therapy office. And this is something that he had wanted to do ever since he had had his first couple surgeries. And he really enjoyed the whole, you know, he loved the environment as a recovering, you know, surgery survivor. And he thought, this is what I want to do. You get to be physical, you get to talk to people, you get to help people. He just thought it would be a great job. Well, during pandemic, one of the local physical therapy offices needed basically high schoolers to come in and clean all of the machines. So they wanted to make sure that nothing was spreading. And so every time a machine was used, Karsten would wipe down everything that they touched. And so it was very, very sanitized. Anyways, so after a while, he realized that it just wasn't as enchanting as he thought it was. It didn't totally feel right. But then he just kept working there. It was fine. It was a good experience anyways. And I don't know, at some point, they realized that they didn't need to have all the machines, you know, wiped down after each use. And so that meant that they could basically, they had four or five people they didn't have to pay. And so they basically told him that he would just be on call and they already had a full staff. And so he knew that he needed to find another job. And so the day that they told him that, he already had a friend that he knew was working at our local resort's restaurant. And so he went over, drove over there, filled out an application. And by the time he came home, we found out that his job was basically being eliminated and he'd already applied for another job, and they had set up an appointment with him with the, I don't know what they call it. Anyways, he already had an appointment to go talk to somebody. So it was just really great because he realized that he needed to find another job and he already had one in mind. And so he took care of it before we even realized that his job was disappearing. So we thought that was really good for him. And then after he worked there for a while, he realized that he didn't have time to hang out with his friends. He was up, you know, every weekend night was, were basically every time he worked, it was a really late, come home. And he decided he really would like something different. So when something came along, he was ready for it. And that was really, it's been really good for him. So again, what I love is that he's trying lots of different things. And I feel like as a parent, my job is to encourage them to try lots of things. And sometimes that means fail. It means to fail. I encourage them to fail because that's where they're going to find the most discovery and growth. And this is the time of their lives where we can actually be there to support them when they do fail. And it's going to happen. It's totally going to happen. It's just part of life. And so it's nice to be able to have that support, you know, when you're trying different things. And, you know, there's a lot of kids that probably know exactly what they want to do. So maybe they won't have as many jobs in their lifetime, and even adults, you know. My dad pretty much had the same job ever since I was born. Is that right? No. Probably a year after I was born, he became a State Farm agent. And so most of my life, that's what I remember. He's had the same job, but that's not the case with everybody. Not everyone does the same job. And so what I kind of realized about this whole conversation that my daughter was kind of relaying to me was that I think it's really important to question the status quo. So the status quo basically has told us for, you know, the last couple generations at least, that you need to stick to the same job. You need to be loyal. It shows that you're dependable. There's a lot of great traits that come with having the same job, but I think that it's also okay to change jobs. I remember Carl's younger brother, he was just moving to all these different companies, moving up the ranks, and he's very gifted. And so it really helped for him to go to different places and to kind of, you know, move up. That's how he moved up. And that's how he got to be in charge of bigger projects. And it was really good for him. And I think, you know, for some people that's maybe it's just that it's uncomfortable for some people to imagine moving or changing a new job or all these things. And for others, it's actually just, it's comfortable to have variety and to change things up. And anyway, so again, I think it's important to just be okay with the fact that not everyone's journey is going to look the same. And I am grateful that the kids are, you know, just willing to try different things. I did do another episode with some of these ideas. It's episode 133, Listen, Get Out of Their Way, and Cheer Them On, in parentheses, Our Little and Young Humans. And I can go on and on about this. I mean, it's all kind of similar ideas. But again, I'll link to it in the show notes if you want to hear a little bit more about my epiphanies about this topic. So there's that. So the second thing that I really thought about as we're getting together, again, I just love being with family. But something that I have noticed is that if there's anything that kills relationships, it's competition. And there's lots of things that can cause havoc in our relationship. But I feel like competition can be so dangerous because it really affects the way that we love and support one another. So I think back to my mom was telling us, oh, I don't know, maybe when we were adults, she told us one time that when she and my dad first got married, maybe she had a few of us by then. Probably. I think it was right after. Okay. So my dad is the second oldest of seven kids, and he's kind of the older brother. His oldest brother was gone a lot. Like, he lived out of state for a long time. He lived out of the country. And so my dad was kind of like the oldest sibling. And then his very youngest sibling is his sister, Michelle. And she is such a special aunt. I love her for so many different reasons. But I remember, you know, she was the youngest and she was the last one to get married. And I remember my mom said that one time, so we would go to Lake Powell every summer with my dad's family. And it was so much fun. We would rent a, my grandma had a share on a houseboat and my uncles that would have boats, and my dad would bring his jet skis and Sea-Doos, and we just had a blast. And we have a ton of cousins, and so it was just like some of the best memories are our summer vacation at Lake Powell every year. But anyway, so I guess Aunt Michelle just got married, and I do remember her getting married. So I would have been young, but not super young. Anyway, so she and her husband came to Lake Powell maybe a day or two late. I don't know if it's because they had been honeymooning. I don't remember what the situation was, but my mom said that the minute they arrived, everyone kind of like, I don't know, they just kind of, what would be the word? Maybe yield is the right word. Michelle, she had some very specific gifts, and what my mom told me was that all the older siblings were really aware of her gifts. And so when she came and she stepped in and started to do her thing, everyone just kind of, you know, stepped back and let her do her thing because she was the best at that, whether it was organizing the food or playing games. I can't remember what it was, but my mom thought that was really cool that she noticed that they really understood one another and were really good about letting whoever was best at a certain thing kind of lead. And I thought that was really cool. Well, you know, now that my siblings and I are all adults, my sister and I, we always kind of, well, and I talk about it with my brothers too, but we talk a lot about how amazing each of our siblings are. And I just love my siblings so much. And we all get along really, really well. I mean, life isn't perfect, but for the most part, like our siblings, we get along really well. And I think one of the reasons why is because we're not competitive with one another. We may not have the same journey. I mean, goodness gracious, we live in such different places. I have a sister in England, a brother in Hawaii, a brother in Kansas City, Missouri, another brother in Idaho, my sister's in California, and then we're here. And so we're kind of all over the place, and yet we love to be together and we love to have fun together. And we're, for the most part, I feel like we're really supportive of one another, even though we have different desires, different stages of life, different goals. Just again, our lives look very different, but we love being together. And so something that I was thinking about is that sometimes we get together as families and there is this underlying competition. You know, when I was younger, I noticed it with my husband, some of his siblings. And I remember watching the relationship be strained and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want that to happen with us. I don't want that. I don't want to be part of any competition between siblings. And then as we got older and, you know, the kids were getting older, I started seeing it within the grandkids. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want that. I don't want that at all. But, you know, I don't always have control over those things. And so I guess what I would say is that I think that it is tempting to look at our kids and look at, you know, their cousins and compare them. But ultimately, I think it's my responsibility to recognize, again, that they each have their own journey and that I don't want them to be competitive with each other. I want them to see the gifts that each of their cousins have and to be able to celebrate that. And it's been really special. I've noticed over the last maybe 3 years, so my kids are cousins, let's see, there's four girls, and then our oldest is number six, and then Anna Claire's number eight. So anyways, they're not quite at the top, but they're not in the middle either. And I've noticed that the oldest cousins, the older four girls, they've really tried to include some of the, I guess the second group of oldest grandkids, and they have formed some really special relationships because they just kind of made room for each other. And that was really special. And then their group is really good to include the younger kids. And so I love that they are trying so hard to form those relationships and to make it special and not have the competition, you know, take over. And so that's kind of number two, is that it really can ruin relationships, especially within families, right? Okay, number three. Number three thing that I was thinking about being with family is that a lot of times there's so much going on, and I think that, you know, everyone's so busy and things are intense and you're all together. And we were having Thanksgiving and I got frustrated because the pie got left out and it was like in the side. And all warm, and it needed to be in the fridge getting nice and firm. And I was frustrated. And I let my kids know that there are two different kinds of pies. There's the pies that come out of the oven and they're warm and they can just sit out. And then there's the pies that need to be in the fridge. Anyways, as soon as I said it, I felt bad and I was frustrated. And then I came home and then of course I'm beating myself up about it. And ultimately, I have to remember what's really important, right? So I think that, I think it's real, again, going back to the whole competition thing and comparing one another, our oldest, you know, he's different from his cousins that are his age, and they're all different from each other. But I know that sometimes I think that we just want, they compare all the boys that are the same age. And I think that that's dangerous. And I have to ask myself, okay, what's really important? And I thought to myself, well, Karsten is an amazing brother. And it took him a while to get there. And he's worked really hard at it. But he is a great brother. He's also a great son. Like, he comes and he gives me the hugest hugs whenever he sees me. And there's so many things that kind of built up to that point. You know, we kind of butt heads, or it just wasn't as easy for our relationship as it is for me with Anna Claire and even some of the younger boys. But for some reason, when Karsten had his first surgery, he understood that I knew what he was going through. And same thing with his second surgery. We really bonded over that, and I could be really honest with him. He could be honest with me about how he was feeling and what was happening. He could ask questions and I could ask questions. And again, we had that empathy. And so ever since then, I think that our relationship has just improved over time. And I kept asking myself, okay, this cute boy, he's going to push boundaries. He's been pushing boundaries since the minute he came out of the womb. But yeah, I feel like something that's really helped us over the years is that I eventually realized that the most important thing was our relationship. It wasn't all these other things that seem so important between a parent and a child or a teenager, just seemed not so important. The most important thing was our relationship. And he's really good. He really does. He comes and gives me a huge hug whenever we see him. When he's here, he's very helpful. You know, we ask him, you know, to help us with something and he never complains. He just goes and does it. And like I said, he's been really, really great with the kids. And the last couple of years, just totally on his own, he'll go out like Christmas Eve and he'll go buy something special for everybody in the family, just something small, but he puts a lot of thought into it. And I just think it's really sweet. And so again, that's something that I don't really want to tell everyone they need to do, but I love that he just does it on his own. And I think that's so special. Something else that I've noticed is he's made lots of different friends over the years. And especially in high school, he's really tried to be friends with lots of different people. And he's had a lot of ups and downs, but I feel like he's really learning to be a good, like a really great, loyal friend. And I think that's great. And then even something that I feel is really important is he's learning to follow his heart. He understands that his journey might look different than other people, and he's going to do what his heart tells him and not necessarily listen to what should be done or what others are doing. He's going to follow his heart. And I think those are really important. So I'm really grateful for that. So again, I think when we're with family, I think that sometimes we have to step back and say, okay, doesn't matter. The pie got left out and it's warm and we'll go home and put it in the fridge and eat it tomorrow and it'll be wonderful. And really, yeah, the whole thing with the kids, just, you know, I just want to remember it's not important to compare, but instead to really just pay attention to what's really important, what great things are happening in each of their lives. Okay, the fourth one is, I feel like that when we make judgments, right, we're comparing or we're competing with one another, are we really able to see clearly, or are we looking through a dirty window? And even sadder, what are we missing out on? So when I was in elementary school, And I probably shared this a long time ago, but when I had my leg braces, when they were first put on, the kids in my class were really cute. They knew who I was. I came in with a new, basically, fashion item, I guess. I had these braces on my legs, but I was still the same kid and they didn't treat me any differently. But I remember we were walking, I don't know if we were going together from lunchroom back to our classroom or something, but we passed another class and a boy in that class yelled, "Look at the robot girl," or something with robot girl. I don't remember, but I remember being super mortified, embarrassed. It was a very traumatic experience. And nobody really said anything. I didn't say anything. We just kind of moved on with life. And then later when I was in middle school, I think I was in eighth grade and he was in seventh grade and we were in band together and we became friends. And I remember he wrote me a note and he just profusely apologized. Was it in a note or did he tell me to my face? I can't remember, but I think it was in a note and he poured out his heart and just said how awful he felt that he had said that to me and that, you know, just how much he was just so sweet and so apologetic. And obviously it really had affected him. I had moved on, you know, I wasn't wearing my leg braces anymore. I had my first surgery about a year and a half before that. And so, you know, I'd healed from it. I was totally fine. I think it helped me be a little bit stronger in some respects. And anyways, we ended up kind of as eighth grade and seventh graders do, we were, you know, kind of, we were going out. I think that's what we called it at the time. So we became boyfriend, girlfriend eventually. But what I think is interesting is that it was really good for me to realize that he was an amazing guy. He was. And something that I learned from that whole experience is that everybody does stupid things from time to time. Everybody has a moment of insecurity or stress and they react to something in a way that they normally wouldn't, right? And this guy is so nice. Like, he's the greatest. I don't know if he'll ever hear this, but he's such a sweetheart. And I would have really missed out if I hadn't have given him a second chance and if I hadn't been open to being his friend. So in the beginning, we were just friends. And anyways, we had a lot of fun together. And like I said, I'm glad that I was willing to wash that window and look out and see clearly that he really was a good guy. Another thing that I thought about with this whole idea is when I went to my 20-year high school reunion, oh, it was so much fun. Most of my classmates I had not seen since I graduated because I went to school out of state and a lot of my closest friends went to school out of state. And so we really didn't see each other that much. And there's only a handful of friends that I saw after high school. And so it was so fun to see them. And a lot of these classmates I had basically gone through, you know, from elementary school. And going back to this idea of judgments, there were some kids in the class that were labeled as, I don't know, given various names, the teachers a lot of times, you know, there was this one cute boy that I would sit next to Kenny and help read his handwriting because the teacher couldn't read his handwriting. Well, honestly, I thought it was really creative. I loved that it was different. He may have been bored and he may have just been writing really quickly, but he had a lot of gifts. And like I said, the teacher probably just, I don't remember if she ever said the word lazy, but I think that sometimes teachers get frustrated because some kids don't want to spend the time to make things perfect or they're too busy. They want to get out and play on the playground, or they're bored for various reasons. I think a lot of kids get labeled in school and, you know, there's kids that maybe you were friends with, but you weren't best friends with them. And what I loved was, even though I wasn't necessarily best friends with a lot of these kids, I loved getting to see what everyone had become after 20 years. And I was just blown away and so impressed. And it even brought me to tears because I was just like so amazed, sorry, at all that they had become, like to hear what their goals and dreams were, what their families looked like, where they lived, what they did for work. And I loved getting to see all these kids that, you know, everyone had been given labels, whether it was good or bad. We'd all been given labels and expectations of what we would become. And what I saw overall was happy, happy adults that had had hard things throughout their lives, but everyone was just, there was something that I thought was incredible about each of their stories. And it was so fun to be able to see that. And so again, I mean, I know that teachers are so busy. They have so much on their plate, and adults in general, you know, whether it's a coach or a neighbor or whatever, we can easily put each other in certain categories and just kind of miss out on the total potential that everybody has. Not too long ago, I heard a story of a family member that had, done something really risque. I use that word. Anyways, if this family member's parents knew that this had happened, they would be mortified, right? And yet, when I heard the story, I laughed. I was shocked and surprised. But at the same time, I thought, you know what? It doesn't change the way that I feel about that person. It doesn't change anything. I love that person. And they, you know, we've all had moments where we have literally forgot to bring our brains with us on that night or whatever. And so I just feel like, you know, everybody's going to have a moment where we're going to do something stupid, or we're going to screw up, or we're just going to, you know, we're going to have a low moment. And it doesn't change the way, it shouldn't change the way that we see each other. And I feel especially about my nieces and nephews. Like, I love them all. And I've seen them do silly things and dumb things, and, you know, and yet I just think they're all so amazing. And I feel like, yes, there's always going to be somebody in the family, whether it's the immediate family or extended family, that's a little bit harder to love. But I feel like that's on me. It's my responsibility to make sure that they feel loved and supported. And like, it's my responsibility to make sure to see their potential and to be able to celebrate them as they take that journey. Okay, so that's number four. This is the last one. So I've been thinking about traditions. And I love traditions, and yet I also love to change up traditions. I feel like there are traditions that everybody enjoys, right? And then there's other traditions that I think sometimes we do it just because it's something that we feel like we should be doing, or because everyone else is doing it. So I think it takes a lot of bravery to look at a tradition and say, okay, am I doing this because it helps deepen our relationship, you know, within the family? Or again, are we just doing it because we feel like it's something that just needs to be done, or it's been done that way for so many years, we don't want to change, right? So I was actually really impressed with my mother-in-law. She loves to do the 24th. And this year, a lot of family members I don't even know what all the reasons were, but people couldn't be there on the 24th. So she decided to do it on the 23rd, have a little family party. And I thought that was awesome. And I thought she was super brave. And I think sometimes what happens is, and at least this is what I've noticed with my cute mother-in-law, I think that she became part of this family, and she grew up in Nephi, and she moved to Heber, and there were certain Heber traditions that Carl's dad's family that they did. And so she happily joined in with their traditions. And then eventually it was time for her to be able to do what she wanted to do. But then unfortunately, by the time that kind of came along, Carl's siblings were all having kids. And, you know, sometimes you got to go be with the other in-laws and other family, and you're out of state and out of town and for various reasons. And so I know that's been kind of hard for her. And so I think that was great that she was brave and she tried a different day. And then the only thing that I would say is, this is something else I've noticed, that just because we're being brave and we're willing to change a tradition, it doesn't mean that when we change it or when we try to do it new the first time, it's going to be perfect. And most of the time it's not going to be perfect, but it doesn't mean we should necessarily give up on it, right? Like, just because some people got sick or it didn't work with somebody's schedule doesn't mean that it was a bad idea. If your heart says to change a tradition or to alter it in any way, I think it's good. I think it shows growth that we're willing to follow our heart even into that road or journey of imperfection, right? Okay. So the last thing that I was thinking about is, I've been, you know, we in Come Follow Me, last week, our Sunday school class was talking about the Proclamation to the World on the Family. And if you're not familiar, I will link to the document. It's really great. It came out in 95. So it came out my senior year, and I was telling my Sunday school class that when the document came out, it basically talked about what, basically it said that families are eternal, families are, they are meant, you know, our world was meant to be, we were meant to come to the earth in families and be part of a family. And it talks about all the things that are, you know, it kind of lays out what an ideal family can look like. And something that we talked about as a class, you know, I just asked him, I'm like, well, very few of us will have a family in this life that it looks or it's described exactly this way, right? And so I asked them, how many of you have an imperfect family? And most of them raised their hands, which I think is always really good to recognize that we do have imperfect families, and most of us will have an imperfect family setting, at least what we think the ideal is at some point in our life, whether it's our immediate family, extended family. It's not always going to look like this perfect blueprint, right? And yet I feel like it's also great because when we talk about our family, there's our immediate family, there's our extended family, and then there's our human family. And we really are all brothers and sisters, part of this human family. And so, you know, one of the cute girls in the class, she said, you know, sometimes she said in the proclamation, it talks about having wholesome activities that you do together as a family. And she said, sometimes it's important to include people in our family that are part of the human family, not necessarily our immediate family. And this particular, class member is the youngest in her family, and she has older siblings that are married and have kids. And so it was really, it's always good to hear, you know, different perspectives. But for her, it's really nice to include friends sometimes because it's just she and her parents now at home. And so I can see how it's nice to be able to include different members of our family in those activities. I think, though, overall, the proclamation can be this blueprint and basically reminds us that we have examples to follow, that we have our Savior Jesus Christ, we have our heavenly parents, and they're going to help us on our journey to realize the blessings in that document that may not happen until, you know, the next life. But at the same time, it's something we can work towards. And it's something, there will be moments when we will feel that the perfect moments where you just feel really aligned with family members or the situation within your family. And yet we will always have that support to realize that, that's the potential. So I guess the question that I kept asking myself is, okay, so what can I do now? What is it that I can do to improve my situation with my family, and who is my family? And so I think, again, like I have to constantly ask myself, okay, what can I do in my immediate family to make things better? What can I do in my extended family, and also, you know, my local family, and then my world family? Like, what can I do to make that situation better? And obviously things don't change overnight, but I think that, again, we have this amazing opportunity that as we are part of a family, an immediate family, extended family, or even human family, we have these constant opportunities to learn and grow because of family members, right? All those five topics that I talked about, sometimes those topics don't come because we have a perfect family. It's because we have an imperfect family. We're learning from each other every single day. And after all, it is a great human experience. Something that I've loved learning from my kids is that we can fight for each other. We can support one another. We can choose to set aside judgment, learn from each other, and not just the good, but also the bad and the ugly. I've learned so much from those moments that are ugly moments or bad moments. Obviously, they're not as comfortable to learn from, but there's a lot of learning to be done, a lot of growth. And when it comes down to it, life is an amazing teacher, and I'm so grateful for this experience. I'm so grateful for my heavenly parents, for their realizing that for us to become our best selves, we really, the best classroom in a way is this family system. And so again, it can be are in, you know, immediate small little family. It can be extended, and it can also be that human family. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for the opportunity that we have to learn to learn from each other and to love each other in all of our imperfections. Again, I hope you had such a wonderful holiday with your loved ones. If you did have a couple hard moments, go ahead and take a minute and see what it is that you can learn from those moments. What is it that your heavenly parents or your Savior are trying to teach you from those moments that'll help you in the future? And it's okay. Again, it's okay to have that imperfect situation, that imperfect family, because that's what most of us experience, right? And it is a great tool. So I hope you had a great holiday. I just want to send a lot of love to you. I'm looking forward to the new year, 2022. I think we're all ready to put 2020 and 2021 behind us and see what 2022 holds. And yeah, I just want to send a lot of love to you and all of your loved ones from the Candy Colored Studio.